Coming to you live from the Cross Country Mortgage Campus in Berea, Ohio. This is Cleveland Browns Daily, brought to you by Ballybet. Now live in Ohio on 850 ESPN Cleveland. Here are your hosts, Bo Bishop and Nathan Zagura.
Happy Friday. Happy March. It is March 1st. Nathan Zagura, the great Gibbe, Jason Gibbs, Bo Bishop on assignment, having a pretty cool day with NBC today.
NBC has no idea.
No idea. Hopefully he's not listening, though. I won't say what he's doing then. I just know that he is.
Well, they should be there. I think they were going to Columbus last night.
Kentucky.
Kentucky.
That's right. He is. He's headed there. Great to be back with you. Great to be back with everybody out there. Got a little bit kissed by the sun a little bit, which was nice. I heard I left and a blizzard descended upon our fair city.
Here.
And then then I came back and there was no snow anywhere.
So and it's going to be 65, 60. 70 on Sunday.
Yeah.
Sunday and Monday.
How was the rest of your time in Indy?
It was good, man. We got some stuff done and coach was great with us on Wednesday. You'll hear from Tom Pelissero. I had a chance to sit down with him. Nice. Some really good insight as to why Bill Belichick and Mike Vrabel are in the unemployment line.
Interesting. Did he say anything about either of them maybe being a DC?
No.
No.
No. No. And I don't see that being an option.
Okay.
So, it was good. The thing that we've taken away from it, and Bo and I were talking about it yesterday, there has been no news. There's been a couple little things that happened on Tuesday.
Yeah, not much though.
But nothing else since you were last on. I mean, it's been unbelievably quiet.
It's odd in the sense that obviously I was otherwise disposed, so I wasn't like dialed in. But normally you would just look at your phone and you would during the combine there'd be a ton of stuff. There just really wasn't anything. It does, your point, it has not been a very newsy combine. I think a lot of what's happening there, and I think I may have like hit on something, is that a lot of what's happening there is happening in the shadows as teams are preparing for free agency, so much more than the combine itself.
I think so. I mean, there clearly seems to be – it's either the quiet before the storm or teams are trying to figure out next steps given last Friday's news of that salary cap change. Because
you know, Andrew Berry was happy about it.
Well, there – and – Pelissero will talk about it. He's like, the number of GMs and coaches that were like, we did not see that coming. And that changes a lot for most teams.
Yeah, it's an extra marquee player that you can have. An extra $10 million player that every team can have over what they expected. By the way, I think probably the best news that's happened this whole week, and I don't know if you guys talked about it yesterday on the show or not, but Jim ringing the bell, Jim Donovan.
Yes.
I got my Team Donovan shirt on here today. I don't know if this camera's on.
Yeah, the camera's on.
Yeah, right here. Team Donovan. So that is awesome. I got a chance to talk with him. Obviously, he's overjoyed, and so am I. I got a little choked up when I heard the news.
So on Wednesday, I knew he had mentioned to me how many treatments he had left, and I'm like, Wednesday, I'm like, I feel like today might be the last day. And he literally had just rung the bell. And I was like, he sent me the video. I'm like, oh, my God, awesome. Couldn't be happier for you and for Cheryl and for Megan. And, you know, the whole family. And it was an awesome moment. And, you know, now we, you know, hopefully everything's good to go. We are we're moving forward. So,
but yeah, that was to me. That's the news of the week.
It's the best news of the week.
The best
news. And that went through the number of NFL circles, like people that just came up to me, you know, from various NFL groups. They're like, hey, saw Jim's stuff. Awesome. You know, that's great. Like, next to, like, the Peter King retirement news earlier in the week, like, that was right up there with the NFL news of the day yesterday.
Yeah, of course. How could it not be?
So, yeah, a lot of people paying their respects and really excited and happy for him and happy for us. And I'm like, don't be – like, yes, be happy for me, but be happy for him. That's what it's all about.
It's great.
Yeah.
It really is. It is truly great and a very, very special thing. Any highlights from the evening? I've heard about – and I got to get – I need Griff. Is Griff on the mic? Is he close to a mic?
He can be.
Yeah,
the mic that he has doesn't work on the stream, but if you need to talk to him.
We're still putting everything back together because we had to rip out half our stuff.
Looks insane here. Yeah. And I appreciate you and Griff throwing my stuff in a bag. I mean that sincerely.
In a box, in a bag.
I mean, that was a sincere thing. That was, yeah.
Oh, you're good.
Griff said he wanted to fold it, and you're like, no, don't fold it. But Griff, I heard that you and Bo had like a great bird adventure together.
Oh, it was fantastic. Probably the highlight of my week.
The bird can do that. It's a special thing. So my understanding of it is you guys both got birds. Bo's bird was lacking a little bit, and he was like, save yourself. Don't wait for me. And so off you went.
Yeah.
And then he changed out his bird and actually got into like a turbo bird. And then the way it was described to me is like one of those slow motion movie scenes where you're birding along and then he comes right by, looks at you, his hair flowing in the wind like Kenny Powers, gives you a little peace sign, and then he took on off.
Yeah, well, whenever his bird wasn't working, I was trying to be the nice guy and wait for him.
Yeah.
But as soon as he got his new bird, he just left me in the dust.
So there's another story to this.
So there's a bird controversy.
I would say so, yes.
Oh, man, I can't wait for Monday. I'm so excited.
A little airing of the grievances.
Yeah, we're having a little Festivus. But you had a great time on the bird, even though it was a solo experience, really.
I wouldn't say it was a solo experience. Bo ended up getting the green light, and then I had to stop, of course. Bo ended up having to wait for me in the hotel lobby because I ended up going around as he was going straight through, so we somehow passed each other. Well, I'm sure he thought I got lost, but luckily I didn't, so that's a good thing.
Ads, now that you've ridden one of the birds.
Yes.
And for you guys rode for a while, right? It was like a good...
Oh, yeah, it was probably about...
A 20-minute bird ride?
Maybe 10 minutes.
10 minutes, okay. Yeah. So substantial.
And it was like 65 degrees at that point. Yeah, the wrath of God had not come through yet.
You're going 20 miles an hour. It's amazing to me that you don't just see random people at the combine walk in like one day just like road rashed up. Because, like, if you went down, it would not be good. And those
Correct.
Roads are not smooth. There's lots of unexpected little holes and nooks and crannies. Cars coming here, there, everywhere.
Well, I've definitely fallen off of one of those birds a time or two in college, so I know how that feels. So, luckily,
How would you describe that in one word?
Just awful. It's
just awful. Rotten. Pain. Yeah. Yeah, I that was... My bird ride home from Prime 47 was one of my highlights, too. It's just it's like being on the open road, the wind in your hair.
It was very windy. It was gusty.
Yeah.
It was a nice night. Wednesday morning, you woke up, and it was 30 degrees. And you were like, well, I'm not doing anything else outside.
Yeah,
walking to places. No, we're going to Uber.
I'm not dealing with this. Any other meal highlights?
Well, we talked a little bit about it yesterday. Uno had a drink of choice at the High Velocity Sports Bar.
He came running back to the microphone. I love it.
Inside the JW Marriott. And he was, by the way, he's holding court with other members of other franchises. The great John Lynch is in the bar that night.
With Uno?
John Lynch and his entire 49ers staff are like doing toast. John Lynch is buying cocktails for a lot of people. I saw a Tarver.
Tarves.
B. Banda Lynch, Banda.
Yeah, I was there that night,
like
too.
That's what the combine
Wednesday
is.
Wednesday night was a big night.
That's the combine.
That was probably the biggest night.
Okay.
So Uno's grabbing a drink. And Uno comes back, and I'm like, what in the bloody hell is that?
Okay,
Uno?
Can I make some guesses?
No, yeah. Go ahead.
I would love to see him guess, because there's no way, unless he listened yesterday.
I did not.
You think he listened
yesterday? I did not listen yesterday. I was being, I was trying to impress one of my childhood heroes. I would guess, like, to me, this has to be a fruity drink.
I would say kind of. In a sense?
Yeah. Yeah. There's,
like,
yes.
Like an umbrella drink?
No.
No? Okay.
Not I mean, like, it's a fruit, right?
It is
a technical
a fruit.
Sense?
Yes.
A prickly pear margarita?
No.
No, but you might be...
You're getting... I feel like it's...
Am I warm?
Maybe it's on the same trajectory.
Is it a tequila-based drink?
It is not.
No.
Is it a rum-based drink?
No.
Vodka.
Vodka, yes.
Screwdriver?
No.
Closer.
Getting there.
A vodka cranberry?
This is a drink, mind you. You're not going to get it because I don't view it as a drink.
A sea breeze?
It was not. It was a lemon drop martini.
I'm like, that's a shot.
I did not see that coming.
Which,
that is a shot.
I actually thought it was a shot at first initially, and then I had seen people order it at a bar I was at before. Like, months ago, somebody had ordered lemon drop martinis, and I was like, this is great. I love the shot. I wonder if the actual drink is good, too. And turns out it is.
Does it come? Did it come in a martini glass?
Yep.
Like the martini glass cut in half, without the
sipping.
Base.
Yeah.
Oh yeah.
Multiple.
Pinky up. This is incredible. This
Tequila Fila was ordering Bud Lights when I was ordering lemon drops. It was a great experience.
That all feels like it makes sense to me.
It does.
Yeah, that's incredible. Yeah. I like that. Lemon drop martini. I feel like whenever you say martini, it's still sophisticated.
I'd like to think so.
I do think so.
I mean, I'm a big fan of martinis, so I hope that that's the case.
My wife's a big fan. That's what, if we go out like on a weekend, that's her opening. It's like Kettle One Dirty Martini, regular olives. I can even
no blue cheese.
No blue cheese. No.
Come on.
No.
Yeah, you got to get the blue cheese ones. So we had that going on. And then last night after the combine ends, you know, we after the show ended, we got out. We got on the road.
Not a pleasant drive home. It's long.
We broke it up a little bit.
Okay.
We stopped at the gym where they shot Hoosiers. We stopped at the school. I don't think any of us knew what we were expecting. Like, I thought it was okay. It's going to be a gym. I'm fired up because I love basketball. And
did you guys put some shots up?
No, there was a game getting ready to be played. They host like 82 games a year.
Wow.
There's actually a game getting ready to be played.
So in my mind, it's going to be like a small, dark, wooden gym.
Yeah. So the original court from like 1936 is still the court. Now it's been relacquered and sanded down or whatever else to keep it going, but it looked unbelievable. We walked in not knowing what to expect. Am I wrong, guys? It was awesome.
It was fantastic. Like,
it was one of the cooler things I've ever seen. Like, there was a guy that took us around and showed us behind the scenes. We were down in the locker room. Like, it was really cool.
How'd you get the VIP treatment?
We all walked in like in our Browns gear, and we're like, "Yeah, we're in the NFL."
We're with the Cleveland Browns.
Yeah, and we're just on our way home from the combine, and one of our guys recommended, like, because they were charging admission for fans for the game. I'm like, no, I'm not a fan of any of these teams. I'm just here to. Can
don't
I just go?
Know.
Yeah, we just wanted to go in and actually look at the court, and the guy took us all over and gave us like a behind the scenes.
There was some incredible stuff in there. From like the history of the gym, the high school, all the games that they've played there. Like, some really big time names have played high school showcases there at that gym.
So the best was one of the guys that took us around. He's a puker fan, but he was a good guy, and so you let that slide a little bit. But there's like four or five guys that like run this. It's an independent group that keeps the gym going and funded and all that. And the guy, one of the craziest things, Ollie, you know, the little scrapper in Hoosiers that like sucks and like all that, like in real life was one of the best players to ever come through Indiana. Like, he was up for Mr.
Really?
Basketball in Indiana. Meanwhile, the guy that took Jimmy Chitwood, Jimmy Chitwood never made his high school basketball team. He was an awful basketball player. They actually told us, like, what they would have other people shoot, or they would have him shoot, and then they would shoot video of the ball going through the hoop.
Because he couldn't shoot a basketball.
Yeah.
Well, why wouldn't they have the All-State guy play Jimmy Chitwood?
Because he was like the little scrawny.
Like,
they flipped the roles.
Got it.
And he was, he was an awful basketball player.
I was listening to, what was I listening to?
I was blown away by it.
On my drive home, I was listening to – I finished Larry David on the Simmons podcast, and then I listened to Larry David on the Conan O'Brien podcast, both of which were very, very funny. But one thing that he did with Simmons was they talked about the worst movie athletes, where somebody was supposed to, they were talking about baseball movies, and when you knew one of the people involved couldn't throw the ball at all, and just how brutal it was, and they called out a bunch of things. That's interesting. I've never heard that about Jimmy Chitwood.
So the actor
who played Jimmy Chitwood could not shoot a basketball.
He had been cut from every basketball team he'd ever tried out for.
And then the other guy was All-State. That's wild.
So, and they said they had it planned out. Remember, because he's got to take the game-winning shot.
Yep.
They're like, no matter what happens, the fans are going to run the court, act like you've won, like you're going to take this shot at Hinkle, like everybody's going to stream out no matter what, like we'll
make it look like the ball went in.
Yeah, correct. We'll figure out how to make it all work. He actually makes the shot on the first attempt. Fans spill out. They said the one guy in the stands, one of the fill-ins, crowd people that rushes the floor, is the coach that cut him like four times.
Wow.
This guy was full of like these awesome little tidbits, yeah. And I'm like, this was great. So we had a nice little stop there. We're driving home.
Can we talk about first the cool thing they were doing with the high school jerseys? Because I thought that was one of the cooler parts.
Absolutely, Uno.
Tell us, Uno.
We have
an hour and a half still.
A large collection of high school basketball teams. If you bring your jersey, they have the whole team sign the jersey, and they'll hang it in various parts around the gym.
Of any high school.
So
if you play.
There was probably
in the gym.
There was like 300 high school jerseys just hanging around with a bunch of kids signed the jerseys that played in there. So it was cool to just like see all of the history of these teams.
Did they point out if there were jerseys that were signed by people you would know?
Yes. And All-Star Game programs from the All-Star Game that
it was just in Indy.
What was it? The one team, it was Odin versus Conley. Like,
There were some incredible names. Gordon Hayward played there. Glenn Robinson III. Robbie Hummel.
Yeah.
Like
a who's who.
Yeah.
That's cool.
So, and on the back of the there's one door that comes off the gym, and you know, it's like, it's the door where they get ready to open it, and they're like, "Welcome to Indiana basketball."
Yeah.
And he walks out for the pep rally and everything, or the first game. There's a door like that on the other side. Behind that door, you close the door, it's a Larry Bird Celtics jersey and a Larry Bird Indiana State jersey.
The powder blue or the white?
Dude.
It was sweet. It was a powder blue.
Powder blue.
Oh, my God.
And I was like, oh, my God. Can I run out of here with this?
That's a gorgeous jersey. That was what I have, back when in my jersey days, I had a Larry Bird Indiana State that I would wear from time to time. It's a beautiful, beautiful jersey.
Yeah, it was great. So we're driving home last night, and on the way down, Griff, you could shake your head all you want. You should shake your head in shame. We're driving home, and on the way down Monday, he goes, "Hey, what is this Swenson's? I've seen signs for it." I'm like, "We're gonna have to stop there on the way home. Get you a little galley boy." One of my favorite burgers.
A little burger.
You know, just to get a little something on the drive home.
Where is this? Are we in Columbus?
Yeah, just north of Columbus.
Gemini?
Yeah, exactly.
Polaris Parkway?
You got it.
Oh, man.
That whole little mecca.
Yeah, they got a nice little mellow mushroom there.
So we're driving, and I'm like, "Hey, we're getting close. Pull it up on your phone. I don't know where I'm going. I'm just navigating. It's rush hour still. I'm getting through that." And I'm like, you know, I want to stop. I know it's going to take a little bit of time, you know. Fine, let's put it up. Our boy Griff can't read a map. He relies too much on the telly, and the Google Maps wasn't your friend. Like, you got to know the maps. You got to be able to zoom and zoom in and zoom out. You got to read the map. It wasn't working.
Somebody got lost on roads in the year 2024? You're saying Griff is the navigator?
I end up getting back on the freeway, going the other direction, before we realize, no, we needed to go one more exit.
I think we got off at the right exit and turned the wrong way.
Well, no. We got off at the exit, the first one that you go off to the right.
Let me just say something.
IT away.
If you get on the freeway going, if you get yourself back on 71 South.
Yeah.
As the driver, you know you're not supposed to be going on 71 South.
I'm going off of what the co-pilot has told me. Am I wrong?
Fair, but at some point you also know where you are and what you're doing.
As I'm getting on the highway, I'm like,
this isn't right.
I don't believe this is correct at all. Now I'm just, I am taking young Griff, and I should apologize because I was just yelling things at Griff. I was
Griff, get over here.
What in the hell?
Good luck, dude.
Good luck, dude.
Griff, do you want to defend? Do you want to defend yourself at all from these accusations?
No, they're all 100% true.
So what happened? What happened?
I don't know.
Google Maps, you literally put in where you're going, right, and you hit start, and then it literally tells you turn right in 500 feet. Turn right now.
Right.
How could it go wrong?
Well, I think also what we're missing out on this story is the fact that we were having a very good conversation with each other all the way back.
We had a great car ride to and from.
We get to Columbus, and Gibbs tells me, hey, where's this Swenson's at? I was like, oh, shoot, I forgot. And so I was looking it up. Well, we passed one of them already, and so I looked up the second one. But for some reason, my phone took us back to the original one that I looked up.
Okay.
So I would say that's what happened. Not 100% sure.
We were going back like to Sawmill off of like 270. I'm like, I am not going back that far.
So you didn't make like wrong turns. You just ended up going to one you'd already passed before.
Yes, correct.
Okay. That's not as bad.
But I was like, Griff, do you not know how to read a map? Because my
mother didn't know how to read the map. The map, he went where the map told him to go. He just put the wrong destination in.
So my mother-in-law would like, every one of the grandkids, everybody knows how to read a map.
Like a real map.
A real map.
She's a cartographer.
Like she's got the paperwork in the car.
Like, that's how it used to be when you went on a road trip.
Correct.
You have to map out
your AAA triptych.
It used to be called map. Remember, MapQuest was like the first place where you could get driving directions, but you had to map out where you were going.
I was angry at young Griff. It was all made up because we had a good galley boy. We had a little fun.
Here's what I
would say. We had a great laugh about it. Did we not have it? Griff might hate me still, right?
There had to be more Swenson's on the way.
Fire.
Weren't there more Swenson's on the way?
No.
I don't think. Not really.
Not once you get out of Columbus?
Correct.
Not even in any of those tons of food places?
No.
Because there's like the three of them where there's a ton of stuff.
Yeah. Nope.
Okay.
There was not.
So that was it.
Yeah.
So you had to go back.
I'm trying to give him an experience. He wanted that. So I was like, let's make this happen.
All right. Uno, first combine for you. Was it what you expected it to be?
I think a little bit. It was the players at the podium was the part that I would have never thought was going to be really cool, and it was probably my favorite part was going over there early and seeing all the rookies. Like,
not all of them. You didn't see Marvin Harrison Jr.
Well, we were gone anyways.
We'll get
but
to
no.
him at some point. I don't know if we're going to do it.
90% of the guys that were over there talking, it was cool to like just listen and hear what they had to say. Like, it was. I watch the combine every year, but seeing that part of it was really cool because you never hear about any of that side of the combine.
Okay. Yeah. Who was the person? Did you see anybody where you were like, whoa, starstruck, anything like that?
I don't think so. We didn't see a lot of, other than like seeing John Lynch in the bar from a distance, I don't think I saw anybody face to face that like really struck me.
Okay. All right. What was your favorite experience of the whole trip? Could be a meal, could be hangout, lemon.
Matt Miller verifying his fullback out of New Hampshire.
That was cool, him giving me pronunciation. And then the meetup that I did on Wednesday night.
A little networking.
With one of my favorite podcasters. Sat down and talked with him for 15, 20 minutes just about the draft, about.
What,
you know,
podcast?
Can I say?
You 100%
okay.
can.
It is Lockdown NFL Scouting Podcast with the Draft Dudes.
Who runs
Kyle Krabs?
Your good friend Kyle Krabs.
Krabs, great.
Great reviews for you guys, for our whole department. Said like loves what the Browns media is doing.
Well, thank you, Kyle.
So Kyle and Joe are a huge part of my.
So that's your favorite podcast.
My NFL listening. They like got me into the draft and the NFL scouting and all that.
I feel like Uno's. I would say without any hesitation, you know more about this year's draft class than probably
me,
Gibbs, and Bo put together.
I've tried to study it as much as I can. Like, it has been really cool listening to all of these.
We're going to have segments with you then, Uno, as our draft expert in-house on the lead-up. Who's your – are you Dane Brugler yet?
I do not have 400.
No. Who's a defensive tackle that you want?
Mason Smith was the guy everybody was saying from LSU.
From LSU, I saw that yesterday.
There's a kid from Florida State, Braden Fisk. He had a heck of a combine yesterday. Brugler was talking about him a lot on Twitter. He's just an athletic freak. I think he would be like a really good. I don't know if he's going to make it anymore, but originally I think he was.
This is impressive, Una.
He ran a 4.78 at 292
pounds. He's got a
mind
like you do. No, he remembers things like this.
He is. That's why when the things happen with the details, it's because maybe he's a genius. It's the genius's lament.
There you go.
One of the smartest people I ever knew in my entire life. This is actually a totally true story. Like, could not master the tying of his own shoes, but the guy was like off the charts brilliant.
Sounds like someone I know over here.
I made him tie his shoes every night we went out.
How did we do wardrobe wise for the go outs?
Well, you saw Tuesday.
I saw Monday.
Monday.
I did.
Which
was strong but interesting.
Tuesday.
Where'd you guys go Tuesday night?
So we found a new spot. So there's a whole new behind the basketball arena. They built kind of like a Crocker Park. It's got like bars and restaurants.
Like on the other side of the
arena? Yeah, we went to a place called Tupelo Honey. It's like a southern like food.
Southern,
and, like
fried chicken?
There was like fried chicken, but like they had a beef barbacoa that was ridiculous.
Oh,
there.
Man.
They had some really good, like even Bo was like, this food's amazing. They had a full bar. It's great.
Yeah.
We went there. It was just somewhere different.
That was Tuesday. And what about Wednesday?
Wednesday went to Iaria's, the department dinner, little Italian.
What'd you guys think?
It was great.
Great.
I knew by
never eaten there.
I knew by the bread that it was going to be good. When they bring out the warm bread,
Yeah, you know, this place knows what it's doing. All right, so I have to ask you right now then. We've got a live interview at 1:45.
Yeah, so we should take a breather. Okay. And then get to Tom Pelissero, and then we'll get to the man of the hour, Dr. Boose.
Dr. Boose.
Making some news today.
Because he's a legend.
Yeah.
He's awesome. He's awesome. All right,
we'll get to everything else in the 2 o'clock.
Tom Pelissero, one-on-one with the great Gibbe from the Combine. That's next on Cleveland Browns Daily, brought to you by Ballybet, a sports betting partner of your Cleveland Browns, now live in Ohio. I don't think I've said Cleveland Browns Daily until that moment. I'm pretty sure so I said Happy Friday. Good to be back. You know it's Cleveland Browns Daily. That's why you're listening. We'll be back right here on 850 ESPN Cleveland.
Cleveland Browns Daily, brought to you by Ballybet, now live in Ohio on 850 ESPN Cleveland.
Don't miss Billy Joel and Rod Stewart together for the first time ever, Friday, September the 13th at Cleveland Browns Stadium. Tickets are on sale now. Visit clevelandbrownsstadium.com/BillyandRod2024 for more information. It's Billy Joel and Rod Stewart together for one night only. Time now to go speak, get a little national perspective. The great Gibbe sat down with Tom Pelissero yesterday at the Combine in Indy. Take a listen.
And here on Cleveland Browns Daily, happy to be joined by a gentleman that gives us plenty of his time when he's in town. And whether it's game day, whether it's during the season, we always appreciate it. Tom Pelissero, NFL insider, joins us from the NFL Network. A pleasure, my friend. Good to see you here at the
NFL
Combine.
Good to see you, too. Yeah, happy to be here.
It's been a little it's been a crazy couple days here in Indianapolis. And it's always while the Combine is great and the drills are great, it's always awesome to hear from all the coaches and GMs. A lot of news. Maybe not as much as in past years, but still some things that are coming out. Biggest takeaway after the first couple days with the GMs and coaches?
I think that the salary cap going up as much as it did to 255 did impact some thinking going into this. I mean, the number, even though it shouldn't matter because everybody gets the additional cap space, just means the marketplace goes up. But the number of GMs who have made comments to me about, like, cap going up really saved us from maybe a hard decision we thought we were going to have to make. I do think that that's going to impact the landscape of free agency, and I think everybody's trying to kind of get a handle on it, because you got to remember, these teams are budgeting years out. They're projecting free agents and putting numbers on them. When all of a sudden the cap ends up $10, $12 million higher than you thought in a given year, it does change the calculus a little bit. It also changes who you're projecting other teams are going to release. So, you know, in recent years, there's really been very little like of the actual old school under the table deal making that happens here. A lot of teams don't like to float numbers at the combine, because then that just allows the agent to shop it around for a couple of weeks. And so, you know, I don't think that there's a lot of those types of things happening, but there are so many moving parts in the quarterback market, both with the guys that are here in the draft, as well as potential free agents, as well as potential trades like Justin Fields, that it's going to be really interesting to see exactly how those dominoes fall and when they begin to fall, because at least in a couple of cases with Justin Fields, they could hold on to him. Odds are they're going to try, if they are moving on from him, to do that prior to the start of free agency. Russell Wilson's got a contract guarantee that's going to vest, so that's something that's got to take place. Those are probably two of the early dominoes that are going to go here, and that then is going to impact the landing spots for everybody else, even at a time where, obviously, you know, Kirk Cousins' agent, Baker Mayfield's agent, they're probably getting a pretty decent feel for what the options are at this point.
Is Fields the first domino in all of this?
I think there's a decent chance of that, just based upon, again, when Ryan Poles says, I want to do right by Justin, well, what does doing right by Justin mean? You know, ideally, I'm sure Justin would just like to be the franchise quarterback and get a massive contract and stay in Chicago, but they're in this unique position where for the second year in a row, they're sitting there with the number one overall draft pick. You have to take everything into account. So really, when you're saying do right by Justin, it probably just means don't hold him until the draft.
Sure.
Don't drag this out. Don't allow all the other teams to spend their resources on other things. And now Justin's going to some place where he's, you know, got a rookie behind him, or he's having to compete to start or something like that. Like, move it along, get him into the right situation. The Bears are going to do the best thing for the Bears. But if you want to do right by Justin, the way that you do that at this point is at least make a decision and don't drag it out.
Who's been the most impressive of the first-year coaches that you guys have had on the show here in the last couple of days or talked to?
Yeah, it's been fun. You know, we had Dan Quinn on set yesterday, and, you know, we've all known DQ, but, man, he comes in and, you know, he's talking about what was the line? I'm going to have a blast and kick some ass. It's like, yeah, like that's, you know, that's DQ all the way. You know, he's obviously energized. He's always high energy, but he's very, very excited. You know, you get, I think one of the themes in the hiring cycle this year was positive culture and collaboration. Some teams said it in so many words where, you know, Amy Adams Strunk from Tennessee puts out a statement after firing Mike Vrabel talking about, I believe the best organizations, I'm paraphrasing here, the best organizations in the modern NFL promote alignment and collaboration. That wasn't necessarily how things operated in Tennessee. So who gets jobs this year? It's Dan Quinn, who's super high energy, positive culture type of a guy. You go to Carolina, Dave Canales, upbeat, positive,
press conference was
culture
impressive.
Type of guy. Gerard Mayo in New England, he's basically a motivational speaker. Like, that's Gerard all the way. You know, Mike McDonald, Brian Callahan, they're more, I think, I don't want to say flatline, but they're a little bit more, their energy level is not naturally, they're not that over-the-top vocal type of a leader, but they're both positive culture guys who come from positive culture places, who didn't get jobs. Mike Vrabel didn't get a job. Bill Belichick didn't get a job. Those guys have both won a lot of games. Bill's won, you know, six Super Bowls as a head coach, and obviously another one, you know, with the Giants. Like, he knows what winning is about. But does Bill's approach in the modern NFL work with this generation of players? I mean, the report card came out. The NFLPA put out their thing. I know it's controversial and all that, and Kevin had to say, hey, we're building a new weight room and all that stuff.
Yeah.
But when they're voting on the head coaches and Bill Belichick gets a B-, and players say in the survey that we don't feel like he listened to the locker room, which, I mean, Bill's always, you know, players play, coaches coach. That's one of his classic lines.
Correct.
You know, and they didn't feel like he used their time efficiently. Like, that's telling. And that doesn't mean that Bill became a poor coach, but I do wonder, in a league where college football is now professional football and you got guys who are making millions of dollars in some cases at the college level,
sure,
and just a generation of people that are plugged in and they're on their phones all day, and Bill knows one way. Listen, he's adaptable. He's a different guy than what he sees. Obviously, Cleveland fans have, you know, perhaps different memories of him. He was, you know, he was different in the
sure.
90s than he was more recently.
Exactly.
Here. But he's been very adaptable through the years. There are just certain things that are non-negotiables with him in terms of how he wants to win in the NFL, all of which was a really long way of answering a simple question, which was who has been fun to talk to here. I think all these guys are, you know, really interesting. Jim Harbaugh being back in the league, that's good
sure.
for football. Jim's the one who, I mean, it is a culture of positivity, no question. He is also, he is more a lot of work. He's going to push people. You know, he's the only one of, like, you know, age demographic, too, the only older coach. He's 60 or 61. He's the only older coach who got a job. Everybody else was, like, even Raheem and even DQ, I guess, is a little bit older category. But, like, those two guys, Raheem, positive yeah. type of a culture guy. DQ, positive culture guy. That seems to be where things are going. Having said that, these things tend to be cyclical. And if a few of, like, the positive culture guys win two games this year and all get fired, watch it come back to we need people who are going to instill that accountability. And, you know, that's kind of how it works. But I do think that there's something to when you watch all these young guys coming in here. And I was in the stadium yesterday and just happened – I was getting makeup upstairs. I need it. And, you know, looking down, I could actually see in where the players were having lunch. And, you know, there were a couple players sitting together, but a bunch of the other guys, it's headphones on, they're on their phones, they're alone. That's just – it's different now. Young people are –
very different.
You know, my kids are going to grow up in a different environment than you and I did.
Yep.
You know, when we were growing up. Like, we go to check into a hotel – and my 7-year-old's like, I want to watch Netflix. I'm like, you can't. Like, we forgot the Roku. You can't do it.
Yeah.
You're going to have to. No. It's like, oh, I want to watch this. I want to start this over. You can't. You just have to turn on the TV and deal with it. Like, you're growing up. Your brain is wired differently here. You know, again, we'll see how all these, you know, the positive culture guys go. But, you know, Kevin is somebody who brought a lot of positivity. He's also another more like, you know, Brian Callahan, where he's a little bit more, I mean, he's as – flat line as you're going to get. You see Kevin every now and then show emotion on the sideline. Yep. But, again, he instilled, you know, positivity and belief. And there's great collaboration with him and Andrew Berry, which is, you know, you look at those organizations that are working well together. I think the bottom line, and an extraordinarily long answer now, is owners want to feel like winning is fun and like they're a part of it. And with, you know, whether it's Mike Vrabel, Bill Belichick, again, fantastic coaches. But it may not always be fun. And it may not always be we're all in this together. It's what I would call the football god, which Nick Saban walks away from college football too. I don't know that the one person in charge of everything works at this point. The closest thing we're going to see now is Jim Harbaugh going to L.A. They brought in Joe Ortiz, who you guys know well from being in the AFC North. You know, Jim's going to have a lot of power here, and we'll see how that goes. But he's won everywhere where he's been.
I mean, it's an influx of college coaches because of the NIL and – college coaches realizing maybe the NFL, it's just all about the ball. I don't have to worry about trying to sell a kid on the program, then find the money to give the kid.
And that's the whole thing. Like, you know, I went to Boston College, and Jeff Hafley was coaching there. He just left to come to the Packers.
He was with us a few years ago.
That's right. And people were, like, shocked. Like, why would he leave? Well, I went out there. They had a Friday night game against Duke a couple of years ago. And ever since Hafley got the job, I sort of knew him. We had a lot of mutual friends. He's part of, you know, the Shanahan tree.
Sure.
And worked with all those guys. But so, you know, we'd text back and forth. I was like, you got to come out for a game. So I went out, you know, for a Friday night game. And, you know, I went to the team meeting the night before. He had me there. And then we sat down and talked. And he was like, dude, the challenges of this program. Okay, Alabama's in one case, or Texas, you know, when you have these, you know, bunch of oil magnates who are boosters and have all this money.
Sure.
If you're everybody else in college football, it's you have to, at a place like BC, rigorous academic standards, of course, because they let me in. Like, you have to get kids who can get into school. You have to be able to recruit them to a program where your best case scenario is you can compete with Clemson. You're probably not beating them year in and year out. Then, if you're like Hafley and you took over a program where the previous regime had really not recruited, there were not a lot of guys left, you know, from like Steve Adazio's final, you know, final recruiting classes. So then you're playing a bunch of freshmen. Well, when the freshmen play, and some of them play well, those are the guys that the big schools now are offering money. So right after the season, there's a transfer window. Even if you retain guys, and you're never going to be able to compete with money. You got to compete with, hey, you're part of something here, like we're building it. This is the best thing for your career.
Yeah.
You keep them. You go through spring ball. There's another transfer window where guys are getting paid, you know, and getting offers to leave. So you got to re-recruit your own players twice a year. Hafley had great recruiting classes within the context of you're at Boston College. I mean, he would have, like, top 25 recruiting classes, but then you got to re-recruit them again and again. And unless you get a Zay Flowers, who gets offered, I think, like $300,000 to go to the SEC, turns it down because they sell him on, hey, you're going to get the ball 20 times a game here. We're going to scheme stuff up. You're going to become the leading receiver in BC history. You're going to graduate. His parents are big believers in, hey, finish what you started. And he stayed. There's not a lot of Zay Flowers out there.
Yeah.
It's just it's a hard environment to have any type of consistency, much less to have any type of a life. Because if you told me twice a year, I've got to like re-recruit all my producers and camera people. And make, you told me that every year they're just all leaving. I got to get them back. I don't know that I would really want to be doing that.
Yeah. All right, one quick one, 30 seconds, because PR guru.
I ran out the clock. No, here. That was my best Bill Belichick impression was giving. You asked me a short question that I want to answer, and then I just talk about
good,
as long
though.
As possible, so you don't ask me
but
anything
it,
else.
But it makes sense. It totally makes sense. Insiders, first year. I know our show is live from 1 to 3, Monday through Friday.
So you're taking away the viewers in Cleveland. I keep getting the numbers. Cleveland's the only place we're not getting watched.
Well, we're watching it. I'm watching it and taking your stuff. That's what we're doing. What's it been like working with Garofalo and Rapsheet?
It's been a lot of fun. You know, we go back. Mike, Ian, and I mean, go way back to when we were all working at different outlets. And, you know, Mike was at USA Today, and then he was getting me on board at USA Today, and he literally left the day I was interviewing and went to Fox. And so, like, we were always trying to, you know, form the Megatron and get us all on the same page, which finally happened in 2017. So, you know, we had different iterations of a podcast, and then we did a fast streaming show. But, you know, this show this year, especially the shows we did the last 2 days, and having just great guests and, you know, the number of people in the league and in the industry who watch the show, it's a lot of fun.
Absolutely.
And there's so many people who come up to me, and this is like the truth, and like the Super Bowl walking around, they'll come up and go, hey, the insiders, which is great because they know the name of the show. It's not just, hey, I see you're that guy on ESPN. It's like, no, sort of, yeah, close enough. It's like, no, they know what the show is. I think it's just, I think people enjoy it. I hope they do because we honestly are, you know, buddies. We'll murder each other at times over dumb stuff. But, like, we're, you know, we all get along. We try to hit every team in the league. We try to have all the information. We try to entertain people as well. So, we did the two shows here. I'm hopeful we're going to do some more shows maybe around the draft. I know we've got one. We got Free Agency Frenzy coming up March 11th through 13th.
Perfect.
Round the clock, NFL Network, so you don't want to miss
Tampering.
That. I'm told we're doing the Insiders the day after that on the 14th as well to kind of go through everything that's already happened, tie up some of those loose ends. So we're having a great time, man. Appreciate you watching.
Absolutely. Tom Pelissero, NFL Network Insider. NFL Combine coverage on NFL Network Saturday and Sunday at 1 o'clock. Appreciate the time. All the best.
You got it, man.
Great job, Gibby.
Thanks, buddy.
You're welcome. There you go.
Thanks.
Yeah, you did great. Great interview right there. Tom Pelissero. When we come back, Dr. Vooss, some big news. We're going to tell you that all about it next on Cleveland Browns Daily, brought to you by Ballybet.
Cleveland Browns Daily, brought to you by Ballybet, now live in Ohio on 850 ESPN Cleveland.
All right, welcome back to Cleveland Browns Daily, brought to you by Ballybet, a sports betting partner of your Cleveland Browns, now live in Ohio. And we head out to Indianapolis via the Twisted Tea Hotline, brought to you by Twisted Tea Hard Iced Tea, an official sponsor of the Cleveland Browns. Keep it twisted, Cleveland. And we are joined on the hotline by the head team physician for your Cleveland Browns, Dr. James Vooss. Dr. Vooss, great to talk with you, and then also to let the people know, congratulations, you have been elected the NFL Physician Society president for a 2-year tenure. Congratulations, man.
Thanks, Nate. Really appreciate it.
So how does this come about? Tell us what this means. What will your role be as the president of the NFL Physician Society?
This is a really humbling position to fill, representing some of the best team physicians across the country and across the world, both our orthopedic and medical team physicians. So this society is solely focused on the health and safety of our athletes. And so it's a pleasure to represent this group where we can all collectively provide the safest atmosphere for our athletes to play football.
And you're replacing the outgoing NFLPS president, 49ers head team physician, Dr. Timothy McAdams. Has he given you any advice on how to do this, or any little nuggets to get you ready?
Dr. McAdams has been a wonderful mentor, and it's as with most organizations, it's really about collaboration and communication. And so it's a great opportunity where he's really helped to fill me in on how things have been successful in the past. And we've really, over the last couple of years, become very collaborative, not only with the NFL and the Players Association, but also with the other medical societies and the NFL and Major League Baseball and Major League Soccer, the NBA. So that's what we're looking forward to, is really sharing our knowledge with all of the sports societies across the country.
You've been the head team physician for the Browns since 2014. What's the biggest change in perhaps the learning, the care, the solutions for athletes that you've seen over the last decade? And now, you know, as you go from not only being the head team physician for the Browns, but to the president of the NFL Physician Society.
It's really been a very one of the more exciting parts of my career to be a part and to witness all the changes that have occurred. The NFL and the owners really have taken the initiative of health and safety really to another level, and as good if, and I think better than any other society. And number one is our mode of operation of becoming proactive and preventative versus reactive. All of the use of our technology and our workout programs to work to prevent injuries and to identify those players that may be at risk for injury. So that's number one. Number two is really a change in the equipment and the rules of the game, all focused Sure. towards safety. Our new helmets, the way the surfaces are. And then the third is the technology available to us. The data and the wearable technology really is more data than we've ever had before and really helps us to be predictive to keep our players safer.
All right, I'm going to throw a couple of things at you based on what you just said there. The first would be kind of in this role now, will you be, for example, we've seen a lot of talk about how they want to change kickoffs. Maybe it's going to be the XFL rule. As the president of the Team Physician Society, are you kind of helping the football people get understand the medical impact of they're starting at 5 yards apart, 10 yards apart, and those differences so that they can come up with an exciting play that also is still safe?
Yeah, that's a great part of representing the expertise of this society as we get to work with Alan Sills, who's the chief medical officer for the NFL, on things just as you're mentioning, the kickoff rule and the hip drop tackle and those types yep. of rules changes. We can provide the healthcare data and the risk of what those rules changes may help to affect. So it's great to be a part of something you know is going to help prolong players' careers and still keep the game entertaining.
Talking with Browns head team physician, Dr. James Vuce, who was just recently elected the NFL Physician Society president. And one of the things that I'm sure got you there is your humility, because you mentioned wearable technology, but you didn't mention that you were the recipient of the NFLPS highest award for academic excellence last year for your research with wearable technology. So that obviously is something near and dear to your heart. How is it being implemented so that you can decrease injury occurrence, but then also help with recovery?
And we're able to watch our player workloads. And in the past, we used to see this person lost a lot of weight during practice, so they look a little fatigued. Now we get very detailed data as to how that athlete is performing. So if we see a drop-off in that data or a change in the data, we can react and intervene before an injury occurs or help somebody come back from an injury. And then the really exciting part is using new technologies to help people recover from surgery. And that's where our research group was fortunate enough to receive the NFL Research Award, helping our athletes come back from ACL surgery by monitoring them internally, monitoring how their muscle oxygen returns. So it's not just looking at how they're running, wow. but we can truly see if their body is ready to return. So great, really added things of being part of an organization like this and being part of the Cleveland Browns organization where you can have an impact on all of sports.
You certainly are. So when you got elected, were you able to, did you get to give like an inauguration speech?
We just gave a very, very brief thank you. And really, we have such a wonderful group of team physicians, and that was really thanking all of the great leaders that have been here before me and all of our mentors here in the NFL. It's such a great group of physicians that really care about taking care of each other and keeping athletes safe. So for me, it was a few words of thanks and gratitude to be able to serve an organization that's done so much for my career.
Right back to the humility again, Dr. Vuce, nailing it there. All right, what did you have, though? I imagine you probably thought about the potential that this could happen, right? And everybody who was in that role, I imagine, over their 2 years wants to not necessarily put their stamp on it, but probably has an idea or maybe a focus of what they want to accomplish as the NFLPS president. Do you have kind of your platform or your areas that are most important to focus on for you?
Yeah, absolutely. And number one is to continue providing the most state-of-the-art care to all of our athletes. That's first and foremost where everything we do is making an impact on making football safer. But we want every venue that a game is played at to have those standardized emergency action plans, so we know that the safety, if there were a catastrophic event, whether we're in Brazil or London or Cleveland or Buffalo, that that same level of care is at every stadium. We're continuing to integrate new technology into the care of our players. You see on TV all of the data that runs. So really using that data to truly help take better care of our athletes. So we've taken some formal steps to integrate that technology. And then finally, we have all of these wonderful new surgical procedures and new ways to rehabilitate our athletes, really bringing those to the forefront to help our athletes return safer. And every year you hear about a player here and there that is able to come back quicker or have a prolonged career from our medical advancements. So we really want to highlight those and bring those to the forefront.
And one of the places that a lot of these innovations are probably going to come out of, University Hospitals, our great partner here with the Cleveland Browns, just opened the Haslam Sports Innovation Center. What's kind of the work there, and is that something that you think is going to trickle into, obviously, what you're doing here, not only with the Browns, but now into every team in the NFL, given your role as the president?
Now, this is a great partnership and program with University Hospitals and with the really gracious gift of the Haslams. It really shows how much they care about the health of athletes and about the community to really help to create this Sports Innovation Center. And really our whole theme of it is to enhance the lives of athletes. And we're doing that by investing in new technology, finding that next new device or next new program that we can then fund and help develop to bring those things to the forefront. So we have a very organized program here, and we use the term living lab, that not only are we sitting inside the lab, our living lab is the field, is the soccer field, the football field, where we can test these new devices and processes. And this gives us all of the resources to do that. And we're just absolutely thrilled and just getting started. And we really look forward to more announcements of the great things that are happening with the Haslam Sports Innovation Center.
That's very cool, Dr. Vuce. We'll get you out of here on this one. At the Combine, I saw our good friend Dr. Kelsey at the Combine as well. You guys, what's a day like for you? Is it because there's so many players there, are you guys really just kind of examining, and is that something that's broken up? Certain teams are looking at certain guys, or how does that all work?
Yeah, it's an incredibly busy day. We have our entire team here with Dr. Kupp, Dr. Flanagan.
Ah,
Dr.
Give them my regards.
So we've got Dr. Salata, we've got a great team here.
Yes,
so we examine all 320 players. So we examine 80 players a day, really to get a sense of how safe they are to play football. So it's a very busy day. And then in the evenings, we have all of our health and safety meetings and society meetings. So it's a busy place. We try to sneak in a nice dinner here and there, but we're really 4 days of being really hard at work.
I would imagine so. You need some of that Elmo's cocktail sauce to clear the sinuses and get you ready. Dr. Vuce, it really has been a pleasure getting to know you. Obviously, I had the great fortune of being able to travel next to you a lot this season, and always enjoy our conversations and our shared love of certain TV shows. So congratulations on being named the NFL Physician Society president. I know how in your field it's kind of the biggest deal there is. So congrats on reaching the top of the mountain. And I know you're saying I'm still going higher.
Thanks, Nate. Yeah, really appreciate talking with you. And thank you for the opportunity to review this. Really appreciate it.
You got it. The great Dr. Vuce. Folks, when you think about your team physician is the one that all the other physicians in the NFL are like, yeah, that guy's the best. That's our team physician, Dr. Vuce. And he's a great dude as well. When we come back, we're going to kick off hour number two with Dane Brugler. Not to be confused with Dean Bugler. He is Dane Brugler, the NFL draft analyst from The Athletic. It's coming up. Hour number two, 20 minutes. It's a bomb. Get ready. Get out your pad. Get out your paper. Get out your pencils or your pens. Cleveland Browns Daily brought to you by Ballybet, a sports betting partner of your Cleveland Browns, now live in Ohio.
Cleveland Browns Daily, brought to you by Ballybet, now live in Ohio on 850 ESPN Cleveland.
All right, welcome back to hour number two, Cleveland Browns Daily, brought to you by Ballybet, a sports betting partner of your Cleveland Browns, now live in Ohio. That was fun talking to Dr. Vuce.
Absolutely. Congratulations to him.
What a beast.
They're great guys.
Yeah, it's a great – we got a whole – our whole medical – our team doctors are all great.
Great, great guys. Another great guy is Dane Brugler from The Athletic. He is their draft analyst, and he joined us as he does every single year at the Combine. Take a listen.
Welcome back to the Combine. Time for one of the treats of our trip to Indianapolis every single year, as we are joined by the draft guru of The Athletic, the author of The Beast, the greatest draft guide in human history, Dane Brugler, on Twitter, at DP Brugler. I just found out what the P stood for, Paul. I remember that. So what a day. We're off to a great start already. How you doing, man? This is like, for you, I feel like this is like you're coming to Disneyland.
Oh, yeah. No, this is something. There's so much to gain from this week, and we've been doing this for how long now? I mean,
a long time. A
dozen years ago, I think. Yes. Maybe it's probably the first time we sat down here at the Combine and talked. But yeah, this is such a important week to the process. It's not just about the 40s and what you learn on the field, but the interview stuff, behind the scenes. It's learn more talk. At night here. Yeah. A lot of things going on. You know, teams or scouts are fresh out of meetings, the pre-draft meetings. So maybe kind of figuring out where some of these teams, maybe they're not interested at all in a player. Maybe they're high on a player. It's interesting to match that up with your preconceived understanding of the prospect. So, yeah, this is a big week.
All right, what stage is the Beast? Like, written and you just have to fill in some things from the Combine, or where are we at?
Don't even tell me how many more days are left until the draft, because it just gives me anxiety.
Yeah, plenty. It's end of April. You're safe.
No,
like 2 months.
The month of March doesn't happen for me, because it's just, it's trying to finish it. There's probably 200 profiles just done. You know, they're ready to go. It's just, add in the pro day information, combine information, ready to go. But then there's another 200 I want to go. And that's figuring out, okay, who are the last 100 that get full profiles, and then the other 100 that are more abbreviated. Because every year, we have 320 players here, but I want to get at least 400. So who are the next 80 players I need to do? Every year there's about 35 non-combine guys drafted, making sure those guys are in the draft guide. Hasn't been since 2016 the last time a player was drafted who wasn't in the Beast. So got to keep that
going. Gibbe's knocking on wood for you. I like that. So to find those guys, is that based on your relationships with scouts
100%.
From around the league? Because they're like, we're talking about this guy.
The teams are drafting the guys. You know, no matter how much I like a kid from Mount Union, it doesn't really matter. It's who are the teams looking at? Who are they maybe interested in that not really a lot of people are talking about? Maybe it's because of they're from a small school.
Sure.
Maybe it's because they were just – something about their profile is not matching up. Maybe they just don't have a lot of snaps. They were backup, whatever it may be. But that's why I have a ton of respect for the area scouts around the league. They're on the ground. They're figuring all these guys out. All the information they get is so valuable to the end process. And so trying to figure that out is definitely a key part of what I do.
All right, so you're coming here. What's your favorite thing about the Combine? Is it the late nights when you're just out and about in the mix here getting information?
Besides talking with you guys, I mean, it's... that was a given, right?
Yeah.
What's the best steak I get? I don't know. Maybe that's that's next. You got to have a steak.
What is your... What's your number one steak?
It's got to be the cowboy ribeye from St. Elmo's.
Of course.
You can't go wrong. It's just... They know what they're doing over there.
Yes,
put it that way.
They got it down to a science.
Even the bread's amazing. It's so good. But
do you handle the shrimp cocktail?
I'm not a shrimp guy, so it's not for me. But I stick to the steak and the green beans
and the
bread, and it's just fantastic.
Yeah.
But football related, I think it really is getting a chance to. Understand where teams are in their process. Because again, after the All-Star season's done, Shrine Game, Senior Bowl, all the scouts, they go back to headquarters and they have preliminary draft meetings. And that's where they all sit down and they go over these players. And the room has an opinion about the player, the area scout has an opinion, the GM has an opinion, and you build your preliminary draft board. And getting a better sense for what that preliminary draft board looks like and feels like from team to team is really fascinating, because I think people would be really surprised how...
I was just going to say, how different are they?
Yeah, very different. And, it's... We need to remember, too, there are 320 players here. Draft boards around the league are 150 names. A lot of guys just aren't a fit culture-wise or scheme-wise. And so understanding who specifically teams are looking at is a key part of this too. And a lot of that happens here at the Combine. And, you know, I know the 40-yard dash, that stuff, I care. You know, I'm
checking a box. Yeah. It's more confirmation, right?
Like, it's a cross-checking exercise. Yeah. This guy's fast on film. Okay, he's fast in shorts and a T-shirt here at the Combine. There will be surprises, obviously. Guys run faster than you think or maybe don't perform up to the level, and you have to go back and figure it out. Maybe he's just not a great tester, you know? Maybe the tape you watched on him in October, he had a hamstring injury. You know, there's so many different factors here with these guys. And so it's all about, as a scout, you have to be part investigator. You have to be part psychologist. There's so many aspects of being a really good scout. And here at the Combine helps fill in a lot of those spots.
Are you surprised Marvin Harrison's not doing anything, not a pro day, nothing?
No, not too surprised. I mean, his dad didn't in 1996 Combine. You know, it feels like every year we make a big deal out of this, but every year it happens where a lot of the top prospects, they don't work out.
We don't go do a pro day still. You do it at your school.
I think it's a good example of a player knowing his power. You know, like I'm going to be a top five pick. You know, if you want to pass on me at three, okay, four is going to take me. You want to pass me at four? I'm not falling past five. So this is a player that understands his worth, and instead of wasting my time training for the 40 and all that, nobody watches Marvin Harrison's tape and says, is he fast? I don't know. He's not. He's kind of slow. No one's saying that. So even the short area agilities, the short shuttle, the three cone, selfishly, I want to see him do it because I think he'd be amazing. Really, really big numbers with all these things, but he doesn't have to. And so why am I going to waste my time training for it? It's I think in a perfect world, we'd have 100% participation here.
Sure.
It'd be great to put data next to every single player, but it's not realistic, and I don't. At the end of the day, nobody's going to be talking about his choice not to work out when he's drafted in April. So
Marvin Harrison is your, and maybe he's not, but if I'm assuming he's your number one receiver this year,
mm-hmm.
Okay, is he your highest graded receiver since who?
Probably Julio Jones, I think.
Okay.
I think
so that's a while.
He's got a very similar grade as Ja'Marr Chase did coming out. So Ja'Marr Chase would be the name that it's like, okay, very similar grades. But then before that, we're talking, Julio Jones. Before that, we're talking Calvin Johnson. I mean, the best receivers that have come out.
Generational.
Absolutely. It's just you can nitpick him, but what are the weaknesses? You know, like what are the things that are going to hold him back?
Yeah.
And honestly, I would throw Malik Nabers in there as well. I think there's a razor-thin gap between Harrison and Malik Nabers. Both these guys are...
So if you're in the top 10 and wanted a receiver, this is a good draft for you.
You better be in the top six, because I don't know if they're... just put Rome Odunze in there as well from Washington. If you want one of these guys, you probably need to be picking in the top seven to make sure you get him. If I'm, say, like I'm the Bears at nine, and I'm going to take Caleb at one, and then I would love to get one of these receivers to pair with DJ Moore on the outside and really make my offense the best it can be, I don't think I'm going to get one at nine. So I'm making calls, see what would it cost for me to go up to seven to make sure I get one of these guys. Because you look at it, quarterbacks are going to go 1, 2, 3, most likely.
Yep.
Whether the Patriots pick third or they trade out of there,
yep.
I think quarterbacks go 1, 2, 3. Cardinals, Marvin Harrison Jr. probably.
Yep.
Five's really interesting. I think the Chargers want out of there. You know, they would love – Jim Harbaugh wants more picks. You know, he wants to really build up his roster and his image.
If they could get a receiver that's that good, and then they have Keenan Allen and Mike Williams as free agents, give Herbert a day one weapon on a rookie contract.
It'd be hard to pass. But, you know, Jim Harbaugh's a different bird. You know, we know that. So he wants to work the middle of the field. He wants a ground game. He wants to build the offensive line. It makes the most sense to go wide receiver there, but I think they would also – they're going to look at entertain trade offers and maybe move back a little bit. And then the Giants at six, they need an X receiver. So there's a good chance we see quarterback, 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 receiver, receiver, receiver with the first six picks this year.
It's kind of the evolution of the league as we talk 100%. Here with Dane Brugler. And it feels like the top half of the first round, I don't remember it being so offense heavy in a long time. I mean, there isn't that Miles Garrett. There certainly is not that dominant edge. Are there really corners that you go, okay, we got to have them, or maybe one?
I think Terrion Arnold from Alabama, and I'd throw Quinyon Mitchell in there too from Toledo. I think both those guys have a chance to be really good starters in the NFL. And so it'll be interesting who that first defensive player is off the board, whether that's one of those corners. Is it Dallas Turner from Alabama, who I think probably be the first pass rusher drafted?
Yeah.
I think a dark horse is Byron Murphy, the defensive tackle from Texas. He's going to tear it up this week. I mean, he's 300 pounds. He's running the 4.8s, and he'll be great. Put up 35 reps on the bench. He's a dark horse to be the first defensive player drafted. But where will that be? Is that going to be 10? Is it going to be 12? You're 100% right. This is if you need one of those premium positions, quarterback, tackle, wide receiver, this is the draft for you if you're picking the top 10.
All right. Browns, we know, no first round pick again. Last year, we'll see. Maybe there's a trade in the eye. Who knows? Feels like the last year where we won't have first round pick. But first pick is 52.
Yeah.
If you're the Browns, talk to me, because you're always very good at this. You pegged Greg Newsom from the get-go back when we used to have first round picks.
Yeah.
What positions are you really looking at? And then who would maybe be a couple of guys in those positions? So I'll start with whatever you think the first position you're looking at maybe in round two.
Yeah, you know, it's tough, obviously, because you don't know how those first 50 picks are going to play out.
Sure.
So you have to let the board fall to you. But I'm convinced that wide receiver is going to be a deep position every year between now and the rest of the time. Yeah, it's just how the best athletes, that's where they're going, because they want the ball. And if you're not good enough to be a quarterback, and there's only one quarterback in every team, you're going to be playing receiver. And so from peewee to youth football to 7-on-7 to high school to college.
So we're entering a golden age.
Every year there's going to be studs at receiver. And this year, you know, we already talked about the top three guys. Brian Thomas from LSU is going to be somewhere in that first-round mix. And then when you get to the second round, a lot of really interesting names. The two Texas kids, Adonai Mitchell, Xavier Worthy, both should work out well here this week. You know, big fan of Roman Wilson from Michigan, what he brings. So I think depending on what you're looking for exactly, what do you – because if you're drafting a receiver in the second round, you're sacrificing something, right?
Yep.
Whether that's size, speed, maybe a little raw, not the best route runner. So, you know, there's a reason he's not a first-round pick. So figuring out for your offense, what are you willing to sacrifice on to get the best player that's going to help your offense? That's something the Browns are going to have those conversations.
Who's your boy, Uno? Yeah, Malachi.
Debo Jr., yeah.
Debo Jr., okay.
Before the catch, he's a receiver. After the catch, he's a running back, man. He is built. I mean, he looks like a running back. He is jacked. But he should run the 4.4s here. He's got speed, too. He's a lot of fun to watch coming from Western Kentucky because of what – they call him the Yak King. And they call him that for a reason, obviously. He's a guy that I think even though he was more of an underneath player in college, he showed at the Senior Bowl. He can track the ball deep. He can be more than that. So – he's definitely in that second round mix as one of those guys. In my top 100 that I came out with last week, he was like 49 or something.
Okay.
So I think right around that range that we're talking about.
Who of the receivers that you mentioned, or maybe somebody you haven't mentioned yet, that like second or even third round, that's just, well, we need a field stretcher, right?
Yeah.
We need the vertical, take the top off the defense, a burner. Who are some of those names?
Troy Franklin's the first one that comes to mind, the Oregon receiver. You think about what the Browns prioritize, and he kind of fits a lot of those boxes. He's young. He's going to run really well. He's a more skilled receiver than, say, like an Anthony Schwartz was coming out of Auburn. But at the same time, again, you're sacrificing something, and you know he's still young in terms of being a more diverse route runner with his route tree. Some of the stuff downfield needs to clean up. There's some Christian Watson there, you know, what Watson gives to the Packers, who not the most complete receiver. But you want that field stretcher. You want a guy that's going to – defenses have to respect that speed and what that does for the rest of your offense. Troy Franklin gives that to you. So I think he is a realistic option if that's the type of receiver they want to go in the second round.
Defensive tackle is a position I feel like they're going to have to address.
Right.
I mean, right now you're coming into the season with just Dalvin Thomas and Siaki Ika. Hmm. Anybody in that second round that would be – you'd be running to the podium to get if they are there for the Browns?
Yeah, I don't think it's necessarily a deep group in terms of interior defensive line, but there are some good names, I think, on day two. Chris Jenkins from Michigan, who, you know, we know what his dad was.
Sure.
But he's a completely different player. His dad was 360 pounds. Jenkins is probably 295, but he's a really twitched-up player, can rush the passer, can stop the run. He was a part of a really heavy rotation at Michigan, so the numbers, the production, don't just jump off the page. But when you see him move and, you know, you see how he can play the run, how when he is matched up with single blockers, how he can break him down and create pressure on the pocket, you see a guy that's ascending and getting better and better. So I think Chris Jenkins would make a lot of sense there. Michael Hall's really interesting, the Ohio State defensive tackle, another guy that doesn't necessarily have the body of work you want, but when he's on and he's healthy, good luck blocking him because he is an explosive guy. So the defensive tackle is not a really deep group, but definitely some names on day two that I think would make sense for this
team. But who was the one that came in, was the number one defensive lineman out of high school? And then
The LSU kid?
Yeah.
Mason Smith.
Yeah. Is he good?
Yeah, I mean, there was so much hype for him, and then he tore his ACL in the opener last year, 2022, came back this year, and wasn't quite the same guy. I think third, fourth round, and the other LSU defensive tackle, Makai Wingo, he's another really good player as well. So both LSU defensive tackles, third round, fourth round, that's the type of range we're talking for them.
It's just, the command you have is just spectacular. It's stunning to watch, talking, of course, with the great Dane Brugler. All right. So we talked a little defense tackle. We talked about wide receiver. Mm-hmm. You mentioned it's a deep tackle class. Is that true into, like, third, fourth round, or is it deep in terms of?
It's top heavy.
Top heavy.
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah. I think we're going to see, maybe six offensive tackles go top 20, top 22.
Yeah.
And then maybe a few more even get into that first round. So we might end up with seven or eight offensive tackles first round.
Okay.
And then a little bit of a drop-off. I'm a big fan of the Yale tackle, Kieran Amageji. But he's a draft and develop guy. Like, okay. He's not someone that's going to help you on his rookie season. Offensive tackle Patrick Paul from Houston's another one of those guys who's really long, but he's available in the second round for a reason. Probably it's more of a top heavy position this year. There's some guys you can get third round, fourth round, but not some. It's not going to be a really deep group of tackles at that point.
Any day two, late day two, early day three running backs that you like and think would be a nice fit for for the Browns?
That's the sweet spot. I don't know that we're going to see a running back drafted top 50 this year, which I think it's just the second time ever in the history of the league.
Wow.
If it happens, the first time was in 2016, a couple years ago, when the first running back wasn't drafted till like 56 or something like that. But once you get into that third round, we could see seven, eight running backs fly off the board. There's a lot of really quality guys, Jonathan Brooks from Texas coming off the ACL is a really talented runner. Trey Benson from Florida State, his contact balance is outstanding. Wasn't really asked to be the workhorse, but man, when he gets the ball, he makes things happen. Bucky Irving from Oregon's a little undersized, more of a complimentary back, but you pair him with in a committee type of backfield, you've got something. So there are a lot of really quality running backs in that mid third to early fourth. I think that's kind of the sweet spot for the running back position.
All right, last one, and we appreciate the time. It's day three. You're in the Browns war room. Mm-hmm. Who is somebody that you are just like pounding the table for? This is the Dane Brugler gem.
My Yale tackle, I think, he's a guy that might sneak into the day two because he is so talented. But my Yale left tackle would be someone for sure. You know, Austin Booker, the pass rusher from Kansas, I think the secret's out on him, and he might be going second or day two now, but I think Austin Booker from Kansas could be one of those guys. I think someone the Browns would be really interested in because he's young. Yeah. He hasn't played a ton of football, but you're buying low and just watch the ascension with him. Andrew Phillips from Kentucky. He's a really scrappy, athletic player. Didn't have a ton of ball production in college, but you love the traits. And so I have to sacrifice something with him.
Okay.
Didn't have the interceptions, but you know what? I think he's a day one nickel and a guy that's going to make my secondary better. So a lot of quiet prospects that I think teams around here are kind of hoping they stay quiet.
Well, write those down, folks. The great Dane Brugler. We're going to get the beast. Okay, you got to subscribe to The Athletic. You get it as a part of your subscription. That's the best deal that there is. When can we expect the beast, roughly?
First week in April is always the goal because you want to get all the pro day information in there. Those run through all the way through March. But somewhere in that first week in April. But yeah, if you're a fan of the draft at all in any capacity, this is a must have for you.
It's a must have it because your team's going to draft somebody. You could immediately go and become an expert on them and understand exactly why.
Yeah, what's his older brother's name? Yep. What's his where'd he grow up? How many sacks did he have as a freshman and all that stuff?
True story. This is true. I don't know if I've told you this before, but
your guide always helps me. So I'm the first person that when we draft somebody, they talk to. Your guide always helps me.
I love it.
Get a personal anecdote in there that they then can relate to because it is that thorough. You've got it all. So you're a master. At DP Brugler on Twitter. The great Dane Brugler. Thanks so much, man. Appreciate it.
Thanks. All right. That was Dane Brugler from The Athletic. Sign up. It's worth it just to get the guide. I mean,
the beast, baby.
The beast. You got to get it. The draft
guide. First week in April.
At DP Brugler. Gosh, love Dane. What a human. All right, well, when we come back, we've got a lot to do. We got some news from around the National Football League as well.
Mailbag.
Oh, baby, we are cooking. And we still have, I mean, we're going to kick some of this stuff on to Monday. But, yeah, we're doing great here. Thanks for joining us. Cleveland Browns Daily, brought to you by Ballybet.
Cleveland Browns Daily, brought to you by Ballybet, now live in Ohio on 850 ESPN Cleveland.
Be part one of the most passionate fan bases in the NFL. Join NextGen STM presented by Ticketmaster, the official waitlist of the Cleveland Browns. Being a NextGen STM is the best chance to become a season ticket member in future seasons. Visit clevelandbrowns.com/NextGenSTM to reserve your spot today. All right, Gibby, we got a little bit of news. By the way,
we got a couple
Richard
things.
Lewis.
We have not gotten to that.
No, and that's one of our hot topics of the day presented by Vivid Seats, an official fan experience partner of the Cleveland Browns. RIP Richard Lewis, and it's crazy. Are you watching the season of Curb?
Yeah.
Okay, so was it 2 weeks ago? Episode 4 just happened. So episode 2
yeah,
is where they were talking about when they die sharing their inheritance, giving a percentage of their estate to each other. And now he's gone. I mean, you knew he wasn't doing well, but it seemed like he kind of had bounced back this season. He seemed a little more spry in the golf scene in episode 3. So RIP Richard Lewis, very sad. And isn't he a Columbus?
Ohio
guy?
State.
Ohio, yeah.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah. I mean, one of the funnier humans. Just, wasn't a huge role on Curb.
Very good.
Yeah, but every time it was like a duck in, duck out, just awesome. So, very, very sad. I thought Larry's tribute was amazing.
I haven't
online.
Seen it. Where is it? On his Twitter?
Yeah.
Okay.
I mean, it was great. It makes you sad, but it also is like, wow, that's pretty amazing.
Oh, are you talking about the thing where he was like, and he made me like
him? And he made me cry, which makes me hate him.
Makes me hate him.
Yeah.
He's the best.
Absolutely. So, interested to see what goes, what happens this week on Curb.
Yeah, they're gonna have to do something. They're gonna probably an in memoriam, but it is
I mean, Richard Lewis. I'm assuming he's going to appear on some further episodes.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, they're all the tributes. He would take time. This is what Cheryl said. He'd take time to tell the people he loved what they meant to him. In between takes on Curb, he would tell me how special I was to him and how much he loved me. To be loved by Richard Lewis, a true gift. I love you, Richard. You will be missed. Richard and I were, this is the Larry one. Richard and I were born 3 days apart in the same hospital, and for most of my life, he's been like a brother to me. He's had that rare combination of being the funniest person and also the sweetest, but today he made me sob, and for that, I'll never forgive him. Larry.
Oh,
yes,
boy.
RIP Richard Lewis.
The other hot topic. Hey, Marvin Harrison, what the hell are you doing?
He's saying, I don't need to do anything. I don't have to. I'm Marvin Harrison, and then you're going to...
I'm not going to talk.
I'm
not going to do this.
I'm surprised he wouldn't talk, because my guess is he didn't want to answer why he's not running.
What do you have to hide?
I don't know. I think it's... Well, especially because the way that it sounded to me, which I saw on Twitter this morning, was that he was scheduled to talk, and then it was just basically reported that he... Actually, no, he will not be talking.
I don't get it.
Yeah.
Okay, you're not working out. Fine. Whatever.
I can't
tell you what to do. I am in agreement with you. Like, I don't know what it hurts to do some of the drills. If you don't want to do them all, fine.
You can just put a 4th. Apparently, it's not going to matter. He's going to be the first receiver taken. So,
you keep going down this road unless someone has already told you, hey, no matter what, like
we're picking you.
Yeah,
which like very
just
well
go,
could be.
Go start getting ready for the season. But I'm like, you can't. You're not going to talk to
him. He probably knows he's not getting past Arizona.
Okay. Are we sure? A lot can happen over 2 months.
Yes, but I guess it does feel that way. But it is odd. We know the Browns met with Oregon's wide receiver Troy Franklin at the Combine. Franklin posted 1,381 yards on 81 catches, caught 14 touchdowns in his senior season with the Ducks. Quarterback said yesterday that Franklin was the toughest receiver I faced this year. Uno, give us a Franklin scouting report.
He's a burner. That was the big thing with him. Like, he's just going to stretch the field. I think he's a little undersized, which was people's concern. But
where's he on people's like boards? Like, is he in play at 52 or is he going to be gone?
Some people, I think, would say yes. And then I've also seen him mocked at like 32 to the Chiefs. So he's probably right in that like late first to second area.
Okay.
Not sure he would make it, but he's the right kind of player.
Okay. All right. I like that. That's our draft expert, Uno. Around the league, I like this one. The days of the chain gang measuring first downs on the NFL soon could be numbered. The league tested optical tracking in two stadiums this past season, and during Super Bowl, 58 at Las Vegas' Allegiant Stadium for line-to-gain rulings. NFL Network insider Tom Pelissero reported on Thursday, citing league officials. Yeah, there's too much at stake for people running in from the sideline, not running in straight lines, and moving the ball. Like, if we have the ability to know where the ball actually was, we need to know where the ball was. Now, what's hard for me to understand about it is where the ball is matters. It's a three-dimensional thing, right? So if you got the ball, if you're here, how does the chip measure it? Because if you're here, right, the point of the ball is here, that's as far forward as you are. But you could be holding it like this, and now the point of the balls are over here, but the outside of the ball on this side, because it's round, would be the furthest point that the ball gets
forward.
So are they going to have sensors and everywhere?
That's an awful lot of electronics on the football field.
Well, and how does that affect the ball itself?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, at some point, if you have something that's transmitting something from the ball, which it obviously would have to be, it has to have some weight to it.
There will be some additional weight.
Right. So how does that affect the way that the ball spins? It has to be evenly distributed, or else the ball won't spin properly when you throw a spiral.
Yeah, and because it can't be on the outside of the ball. Can't be a piece of leather missing.
No.
Like, it's got to be.
Right, so it's inside. I'm curious about that.
I don't know.
I'm curious about that. We need you back. Help us understand what's going on here.
Yeah, of course, he talks about it after we talked yesterday.
The Vikings have released their former starting running back, Alexander Mattison. He was really only a starter for 1 year, but he lost the job as the season went on to, I had him on a couple of my fantasy teams. You got that name, Uno? Tyson Chandler? Ty Chandler, yeah. Ty Chandler and Cam Akers, yeah. We'll get your mic on, Uno. From NFL.com, Steelers GM Omar Khan said, I have full faith in Kenny Pickett, but still open to competition in the room.
What are they doing?
I thought Mason Rudolph was the guy.
I don't know. They both suck.
It's great.
I
don't want.
I'm totally all in too.
They don't need.
Send Fields to Atlanta. That seems to be trending in a decent direction.
Well, there's supposedly, you see the video where is that real? In the background, his manager says, "You ready to go back home?" or something like that. You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah.
Is it real?
I don't know.
All right. We don't know.
I don't know. It's very strange. Yeah.
Listen, fine.
I keep hearing. So like that was the whole thing. Like, we want to do right by Justin Fields. And Pelissero said it. Well, if you're going to do right by Justin Fields, then this has to get done here in the next 7 to 10 days. Otherwise,
it's all got to get done before the start of the league year.
Yeah. I mean, otherwise, you're putting him at a disadvantage and a disservice, and you're doing a disservice to you for getting whatever you can for him.
Agreed. That'll be interesting to see. All right, do you want to take a break and then do mailbag, or do you want to do mailbag and just take it all the way up?
I think we're just going to keep it.
Okay.
I mean, the mailbag. Is everybody on vacation this week?
Yeah, there's not a lot going on. There's just not a ton going on in the sports world. So I, maybe some people as well, also did not see or hear from Stefanski. Was there anything that Stefanski said to you guys or to the media in general that really stood out to you?
No, not really.
No.
No. I mean, AB had the news making stuff of the day.
Yep.
And actually it was funny. I was walking to my car yesterday and after the show was over, I'm walking to go get the car to pick it up to take it back and pick up all the gear and head home. And I'm walking, all of a sudden, guy next to me, shadow, is like this big person next to me. And he's like, "So, I'm going to see you guys in August." It was Kwesi. I'm like, Kwesi, my guy.
Yes. Yes. That makes, was he wearing that awesome white quarter zip?
He had a different one on that was also awesome. Just awesome.
Yeah, it doesn't surprise me at all.
Yeah.
All right. We
the
got
gear
one.
Is, the gear is fantastic.
We got a question here from Enough from the Clown. Big fan of Enough from the Clown. Said, "I hope I didn't miss the mailbag. Nathan's here. Which notebook iPad are you running?" This is an iPad Pro from many years ago. And he says, "Is it good?" Yes, it is good. It's just getting old. It's starting to show its age. Its computing data is not, it's not computing like it used to, which is driving me nuts. So does it need improvement? Yeah, it probably does. Probably might be time for
by the way, for a new iPad. The one that you that died, that you upgraded to that,
yeah.
We found when we were cleaning out the office.
An iPad?
Yeah.
Oh, baby.
Like no, like the team, the one you have is very valuable.
This one?
Yeah. Well, you have access to things.
Oh, yeah. But the old one doesn't, I don't think.
I don't know. It's,
I don't think
it's
so.
Dead currently, it's but we found it.
It's toast. Yeah. No, this one's good, but I think it is probably, it's probably time for a new one.
By the way, the great Matt Schrodek, Chris Cola, and Drew.
Oh, man, whole new office?
Yeah, we got cabinets coming. They're like, hey, they were supposed to be here today. They'll be here Monday. I said, great. No
all
worries.
Right.
All good. But Griff has a workstation now.
I know.
Griff.
Why does Uno keep staring at me? Why are you staring at me, Uno? You have mailbag questions for us?
I have nothing, no.
Do you have a question that you want answered right now about anything?
How was your golf? Did you shoot well?
I did. Started off slow and then got
How's
it going.
The back?
Backpacks, miraculously, it feels like playing golf has helped my back. I was not feeling good on the way down there. I was lying down and stretching and contorting my body and trying to feel like I could stand up. And then all of a sudden, the sun hit me. It was time to hit a golf ball, and my body's like, you're good.
That's walking. Like, I didn't have any less than 15,000 steps a day.
Oh, yeah.
Like, I felt good, though. Like, the weather was good, yeah. Everything. I came back here, like, this morning. I went to get out of bed. I'm like, what in the bloody hell? Why do I feel like a 90-year-old man again? Like, everything's sore. Everything's achy. I'm like, I think it's the weather.
It is. All right, here we go. Thoughts on the Ohio State draft class this year? Which one would fit best on the Browns? Uno.
Probably.
Uno's running mailbag.
Mike Hall, the defensive tackle, would be the best bet. We're obviously not going to get Marvin. Cade Stover, their tight end, would be a fun late addition. I think he's got a nice mix of blocking and receiving. And I think he's from Southern Ohio.
Okay.
So he's at least an Ohio kid. So those are probably the two biggest ones for us.
All right. Very good. Don Verdell says, I believe the Polaris Mellow Mushroom is closed. Tried stopping a couple months back. Say it ain't so.
I don't know.
Can we quickly Google this? Mellow Mushroom, Polaris Parkway, Columbus. Iron Will says, I missed the debut of Kelsey Russo yesterday. Did a
she
fine
was
job.
On.
How'd
she
do?
On. She did good.
Nice.
Everything went well, man.
Good.
Yeah, well, we had a... Coach was delayed coming to us on Wednesday, so we threw her into the fire with like 15 minutes notice. I'm like, hey, you, Jordan Reed.
It is closed,
minutes.
By
you
the
good?
Way. 15 years.
It's been...
After 15 years, it's closed down, the Mellow Mushroom.
Why?
Oof, you are angry.
I almost, if I had gotten out of Indy later where I wouldn't have gotten home at a time where I could maybe.
Did you make good time or no?
I did. Yeah. Okay. I was in the door by about 9:15.
Not bad.
Yeah. Not bad. Little news. This is Zach Klein via 92.9, the Game Sports Radio. Arthur Blank has basically told his front office staff, do what you got to do, pay what you've got to pay, get it done. Everybody that I've talked to, agents, other coaches and scouts, guys around the league, that's the feeling, that's what they're hearing. The Falcons are putting all their attention on Kirk Cousins.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Huh. Okay. That's... business is picking up.
Yeah. And we'll see it.
And with that, so much more to come.
Oh, man, hold on. I got one more. Hold on.
I got one more. Just hold it.
Okay. All right. I'll hold it. All right. So much more to come. Cleveland Browns Daily.
Cleveland Browns Daily, brought to you by Ballybet, now live in Ohio on 850 ESPN Cleveland.
Don't miss Billy Joel and Rod Stewart together for the first time ever Friday, September the 13th at Cleveland Browns Stadium. Tickets are on sale now. Visit clevelandbrownsstadium.com/BillyandRod2024 for more information. It's Billy Joel and Rod Stewart together for one night only. Grill! I got a tweet here. I don't know what it means. It says, I don't see it on Apple Podcasts. Uno, Griff, you got one job, arrows down.
Yeah, that's on me. Didn't have any service driving home from Indianapolis yesterday to post.
Everything will be up before we leave today.
Yeah, so that feels fair.
Yeah, all the shows will be up by the end of the day.
All right, that feels fair to me. That feels pretty good. All right, very good. Well, it's good to be back. Thank you to Tom Pelissero. Thank you to Dane Brugler. And congrats and thank you to Browns team physician and president of the NFL Physician Society, Dr. James Voos, all for joining us today. For the great Griff and Uno and Gibbe, Nathan Zgura saying the next level is next. Thanks for listening to Cleveland Browns Daily, brought to you by Ballybet. Have a good weekend, everybody.
You've been listening to Cleveland Browns Daily, a production of the Cleveland Browns and 850 ESPN Cleveland.